How's it going, everybody? We're back with another edition of the Ad Podcast. And today I have a super exciting guest for you guys. Neil Patel, really, he needs no introduction to any of you that are breathing on the internet. But just in case you don't know, he's probably considered the largest influencer in the marketing world with over 1.2 million followers on YouTube. He has substantial followings on all social media platforms, but he also generates a massive amount of traffic to his website and blog, which is all around tips and tricks for marketers to learn how to get better at their craft, tools that he owns or evaluates. And I had a great time reading through the archives today myself. Neil is also the CEO of Neil Patel Digital. He's a New York Times bestseller of the book Hustle, and the White House, the UN, and Entrepreneur Magazine all call him a top influencer in the marketing world. So Neil, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I kind of banged through quickly some of your background, but any other highlights that you'd like to walk our audience through on kind of your journey?
No, not really. You know, the highlights, the awards, the accolades. At the end of the day, they don't mean much. I appreciate them, but it's more so if you're having fun what you're doing and you love it, good for you. If not, it doesn't matter if you're making a lot of money or not, you should do something that you love and you're happy with in life.
Yeah, I love that. I thought that was when I first kind of opened your book this morning and I saw that the title was Hustle. You know, at first I think a lot of entrepreneurs are maybe starting to have a little bit of a backlash to kind of the, you know, the Gary Vee hustle culture that was established maybe 5 to 10 years ago. But I love that your take on hustle was a little bit different. Would you actually jump into how do you define hustle today? You know, knowing that your book was written a little bit back.
Yeah. So it's really murky because it depends on who you are and where you are in life. Mm-hmm. Like, someone who is establishing their career and has done really well, hustle for them is going to be very different than someone who's starting off. But the easiest way to look at it is, you know, just getting stuff done and being scrappy. But I would say it's very different depending on where you are in life. Hustling for me is very different than it was for me when I was 16 years old and starting off, right? So times change and, you know, you got to figure out what works for you.
Yeah, no, I love that. And, you know, I love that hustle was really talking about leveling the playing field from nepotism and socioeconomic background. I love the story of you coming to America, you know, with immigrant parents and really the work ethic that they instilled in you. And it sounded like all of your co-writers had a similar background. That's probably what brought you together on the book. But, you know, I love that idea that hustle is that common denominator between us all that can level the playing field no matter where we were born in life.
Yep.
Nice. Well, cool. Well, hey, I wanted to ask you, you recently tweeted about the idea that we were coming into a new era of email. I'd love to understand what you meant by that tweet.
Yeah, so if you look at a lot of how people were writing emails back in the day, essays, long lang, oh, you need newsletter subscriber, emails, you know, they're not dead. They're still popular. Billions of emails are being sent on a daily basis. You can still get clicks. But what we're seeing in the new age of email is people want casual emails, like it's a friend sending you an email. They want short and sweet. They want it to the point. They don't want tons of fancy HTMLs and images. Think of like how you send a text message to someone, but a little bit longer version of that in an email. And we're also seeing the best click rates are for emails between roughly 100 to 250 words long. Like, they don't need to be that long.
Yeah. And, you know, it seems like now with email too, it's like you said, especially with like AI kind of clogging up a lot of people's inboxes. I recently did a survey on LinkedIn to try and find out, you know, how many cold emails every single day does a brand marketer or an agency person get? And, you know,
it's a lot.
The, the public facing comments were like, maybe I get 5 to 10 a day, but like friends that DM'd me or text me on the side is like, bro, I get like 200 a day. I literally have no way of deciphering what is valuable and what is not. And if I tried, it would literally just take my entire day. So unfortunately, I just have to hit delete all and then, figure out, the only ones that I ever actually look at are ones that come in from referrals or trusted sources, things like that.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you about another one of your marketing philosophies. You talked in a blog post about the rule of seven. Can you talk a little bit about what the rule of seven means?
Sure. So in marketing, people have tons of options these days, or actually not even in marketing, just in life. You have tons of options, from products, different services. And with technology, it makes it easier for people to copy you and create similar products and services. It's really hard to differentiate. I think the only moat really left in marketing is a brand. And for people to really resonate with your brand, you got to follow the rule of seven. The rule of seven is when someone sees or interacts with your brand seven times, they're much more likely to evangelize, purchase from you, talk to others about it. And the way you do that is you're omni-channel, you're on social networks. According to Demand Sage, the average user is on 6.6 social networks, not one, not two, not three, but 6.6. That's a lot. So whether it's a blog, an email list, SMS list, social profiles, you got to pretty much be everywhere.
Yeah, that's crazy. It reminds me a little bit about that blue car effect, I think, that I've heard mentioned, where when you see an ad campaign in multiple mediums, like if I walk down the street and I see a billboard and then 10 minutes later I see a banner ad and then 15 minutes later I see an ad on LinkedIn, I suddenly feel like this brand is everywhere. So it sounds like that's kind of coincides with that.
Yep. Nice. And it works. You got to blink the web and build a brand. That's like why companies like Nike just do so well. I have little kids that I know that say, I'm faster than you. I got Nike shoes. Nike shoes don't necessarily make you faster unless someone else is wearing some really clunky shoes that are heavy. But for them to think that, power of the brand.
Yeah, it's that that brand identity that they've built. So you also, I also read in your book that you spent a little bit of time as a door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman. This is like earlier in your career. I have a belief that every great salesman has to have a really shitty sales job at some point. mine was in a boiler room selling investment product to attorneys. So you could imagine how hard it was to A, even get an attorney on the phone to get past his gatekeeper. And then B, you had to really get their attention within, 2 to 3 seconds, because time is money for attorneys. But I learned a tremendous amount about sales and dealing with, very high level prospects through that process. What is your takeaway from that job? Did it, add any kind of grit to your, determination around hustle? I read later that you never sold a vacuum, which is interesting. Yeah. But did was that a job in any way, did it all have an impact on you?
It didn't have really of an impact. Went door to door. I had to clean a lot of people's carpet for free to show them the value of the vacuum. A lot of people let you in and let you clean their carpet. They're not going to end up paying you. But a lot of people would say like, hey, for $20 more, you can clean the rest of my house. And I was like, yeah, I can make some money actually just cleaning people's houses. So I was doing a little bit of that.
Wow.
I sold one vacuum and then the lady returned it 2 days later.
Oh no.
So it never really worked out. Commission only. Didn't mind it. Hard work, but I was always down for hard work even before this job. I used to like clean restrooms and pick up trash at a theme park as well before this. But, hard work was never really an issue.
I love that. So, in another blog post, you had a quote called "Riches are in the niches." Can you talk a little bit about what that means to you, and maybe elaborate a little bit?
Sure. So, I've changed my tune on that over the years. I believe riches are not in the niches. I believe riches are in the big TAMs. If you're in a $1 million market, and it took me forever to learn this as an entrepreneur, but if you're in a $1 million or $10 million market, it's harder to capture 50% of the market versus going after a $1 trillion market and capturing 0.01% of it.
Wow. No, that makes sense. So it's got to be like niche enough to where you can have a specialization, but broad enough as well to have a total addressable market that you can actually build something of value.
Yeah. And I don't even know if you need to even niche down that much, right? Mm-hmm. Like I just go broad.
Yeah.
That's broad cool. And be amazing at it and whatever you're doing.
I love that. So in a recent article, you mentioned that human created content actually outranks AI 94.12% of the time. Are we safe from AI replacing us as marketers?
I think AI will not replace marketers. I think AI will help marketers do a lot of their tasks and they'll become much more efficient. I don't see a world where AI can just do everything. You know, people talk about AI as this magic wand or, you know, you click a button and it pretty much solves all problems. I think people overestimate AI in the short run. Funny enough, though, I think they underestimate it 5-10 years from now. I think it'll be able to do wonders for you, but it's not as simple as just replacing a human. It's not that easy. In marketing or anything that involves creativity. I do believe, though, it can replace a lot of stuff like people flipping burgers or people mopping a floor. There's a lot of basic stuff like that that, you know, AI will end up replacing. And most people look at AI as software. You know, imagine once it's really integrated with hardware, which will happen. You'll have robots walking around. You won't be paying people to clean your homes anymore. You won't be paying cooks anymore. Check out the Apple Vision Pro. Okay. So there was a demo, I believe it was on TechCrunch or CNBC or something like that. The person was giving you an overview on how it was like wearing the Vision Pro, or maybe it was actually on Instagram. I don't know which social channel, but it was this morning I saw. The person was cooking and the ingredients were right in front of them in the goggles and telling them what to do step by step.
Wow.
Right. It wasn't analyzing how they were cooking. It was more so telling them what to do step by step. So they didn't have to look in two different places. It was just right in front of them. Now imagine this being passed into a robot and the robot is able to analyze what they're doing and how it looks compared to where they're at. You'll eventually get there. It's just time. Well, I think it's going to be 2-3 years. No, I think some of these things are going to take well over 5 years. This is not easy stuff to do. Is it moving fast in the grand scheme of things? Yeah. You know, Earth's been around billions of years.
Yeah. And I love that, you know, you had a really cool long form article on your website that was really about AI prompt engineering is really like a key skill set right now, because, you know, it's like garbage in, garbage out, right? If you're, if you don't know how to prompt these AI platforms and tell them like, write an article, but do it this way and make sure you cite sources and make sure you get statistics and do it in the style of Hunter S. Thompson or whatever the key word is, you know, it's like you really have to, I think you mentioned like there are AI prompt engineers that are getting starting salaries right now of like 250 grand out of school and stuff like that. So it seems like it's a huge component is actually knowing how to talk to these AIs and then have the human editing component and then making sure that you're not plagiarizing anything. Like I remember I had an early experience with, you know, one of my clients that was very heavy into AI and we're an influencer marketing agency. So he sent me over, he's like, hey, I basically did your job for you. Like, look at all these influencers that I found for our campaign. Like, all right, now you guys go out and reach out to them. I'm like, okay, cool. And then as we started to look at the influencers, not a single one of them existed. So so he thought he really pulled one over on us. But unfortunately, you know, the robots were telling him what he wanted to hear.
Yep. It's crazy. But look, I think the world is going to change. How? I don't know. Do I think the people creating these things even know how it's going to change? No. I think it's early on and they'll start learning a lot just like we are.
Yeah, love that. So you recently acquired a company called Rebel House. What'd you like about them and what do they do as far as increasing the capabilities of the agency?
What attracted me at first to them is they've had some cool commercials. Like they did one with Jennifer Lopez, and she was pitching Goli apple cider vinegar gummies. And she's just like, Genergy, you know, like this is going to give me Genergy. Like she was coming up. It was quite a bit more creative than what I'm explaining. But if you watch the video, it looks really cool. And then we started looking at more of their work, particularly in the B2B category. And we're like, oh, wow, these guys do some creative stuff. And we had the demand on our side from our clients. We're like, this would be a great fit to just acquire this company. And we worked with them for a while. So we already built up a partnership and we know how the founder works and the team works, and we were happy with them. So it was a great acquisition. We're really happy with it. It's going really well. We actually acquired it technically in November of last year. We announced it recently. And then we'll probably wrap up two more acquisitions in the next 2-3 months. We'll probably announce them 5 months from now, but you know, it's we're continually moving and shaking and trying to keep getting more of these deals and do more of the stuff, but we're having fun along the way.
That's awesome. So you are fully Sir Martin Sorrell, holding company, going after it, buying agencies all the time.
Definitely not Sir Martin Sorrell. We don't have the firing power that he does. And he's been in the industry much longer than us. So he has quite a bit more experience. We're buying where we feel that can help us out. Like we're looking at one company right now in APAC, and we're looking at one company right now in LATAM to give us more regional expansion. Our head of M&A, I couldn't make the call while we were doing this live, was on the phone with a company in Italy. Earlier today, you talked to a company in France, but we're looking all over the globe. You got to kiss a lot of frogs to find the right ones. It's tough because it's not just about revenue or growth or profit. It's also about cultural fit and what are they doing and is there alignment?
That's cool. So you guys basically look for capabilities, partnerships first, where you feel like there's a culture fit and your teams integrate well. And then if the numbers make sense, you try and bring them into the fold.
Correct.
Very cool. Awesome. Okay. So recently you said that too many people focus on acquiring customers and not enough focus on keeping them. Can you talk a little bit about that principle?
Sure. The money is not made from marketing and generating a customer. The money is made from keeping a customer and getting to spend over and over again. Amazon is a big $1 trillion+ company, not because they're good at marketing. Amazon's a $1 trillion+ company because people go and buy from Amazon 10, 20 times in a month. So they may have lost money on you in the first year, but you've now made 500 purchases on Amazon and they made a killing. That's the key. It's repeat business.
So it's looking at lifetime value versus acquisition cost. And, you know, too many marketers are focused on acquisition at any cost, or maybe acquiring a customer at a positive return on ad spend. Then they're not thinking about if they add additional products or can increase cart size or increase purchase velocity. Like that's where you make the real money. But so many marketers get bogged down in the cost per acquisition.
Yeah. And look, you should look at cost per acquisition. You should optimize for getting more customers, but you should be spending more time keeping your customers happy and continually get them to spend more and more versus just focusing on top of funnel. Everyone wants more customers, but if you got a big leaky bucket and all the customers are falling through, what's the point? You're better off figuring out how to keep your customers and getting them to spend more and more money. That's the real way you build a massive business.
Nice. So yeah, you got to watch that churn and keep the clients that you've got today.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. My next question is related to podcasts. So you're a huge prolific podcaster yourself. You obviously took this guest podcast. I guess my first question is, I'm interested as a podcast host. Why did you say yes to doing my podcast?
You hit me up and I said yes. And I typically have an open door policy. I say pretty much yes to almost every podcast. And you're really kind on how you asked. And I was like, why not?
That's awesome.
And you did your homework. I could obviously tell that you really did your homework before this podcast. I'm having fun doing it. And it also helps me create content too. I can end up taking this content, slicing and dicing it, and putting it around the web. it ends up being a win-win situation.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think so many podcasters are, well, I don't know. I know I do a lot of inbound, and I think I've actually reached out to you in the past, but where I think I was able to maybe get on your radar was you were in San Diego last week and I was in San Diego. And I think I tailored my outreach to be a little bit more specific to you doing the podcast while you were in town doing a speaking gig. So maybe that caught your attention, which was kind of cool.
I think you hit me up on Instagram, right?
I think so. Yeah. It was either, I mean, I go at people from all directions, so sometimes I forget too.
Yeah. So then with me, you know, yes, I have my email, which is neil@neilpatel.com, but we also have like np@neilpatel.com and a lot of other email addresses that are my name that don't go to me. So a lot of times people hit me up in areas where I'm not actually getting the email.
Got it. Okay. And then what do you think is more important, building your own podcast or guesting on other podcasts?
I think they're both important. You know, you should build your own podcast because it's a wide open ocean. It's not that competitive. There's only 4.5-ish million podcasts in comparison to a billion plus blogs. It's a wide open ocean. But at the same time, you know, when you're starting off, you only have so many viewers. There's other people with tons of viewers. Leverage their podcast and their audience. You'll do better faster.
I love that. Another company that you acquired recently is a company called Answer the Public. And I think you gave some really great insights into how that tool can be leveraged for not only content idea generation for, you know, AI generated articles or ideation, but I was curious, what was attractive about that tool? Why'd you decide to add that to the portfolio? And it sounds like you're not just acquiring agencies, you're also acquiring technology. So I'm just wondering a little bit more about that strategy too.
It was a mismanaged tool that had a nice massive audience and we knew we could fix it. And we did. From when we acquired it to now, the profit on that business is almost 3 times higher.
Wow. That's super cool. All right. I want to get into the final stretches since I've got you for 3 more minutes. So I want to talk a little bit about MySpace, which is the influencer marketing space. We're big believers that this is the year of B2B influencers. Specifically, influencer marketing campaigns are going to be led and started off on LinkedIn, but then spanning to other social networks where people have large followings. So what is your hot take on LinkedIn as a social network? But more importantly, do you agree with me that this is the year of influencer marketing for B2B?
Sure. First off, what's your influencer marketing agency? Love to check it out on a
site. Yeah, we're called the Social Standard. If you see the slug in the top right hand.
I see it. Yeah, I was thinking that. I was like, is it the show name or is it the company name? Or
that in? Well, let's say my boss is the primary sponsor of the show.
There you go. So the way I look at influencer marketing, it's been hot for a while.
Yeah.
Even in B2B, it's been hot for a while. What we're seeing right now is, yes, on Instagram and places like that, I mean, LinkedIn, not Instagram, but even on Instagram, you're seeing more people who are putting in the time and energy into building influencer marketing agencies because there is quite a bit of revenue to be had. And there is a lot of not just revenue to be had, but there's a lot of ROI because it's way cheaper than advertising directly on the platforms in many cases. And you're seeing it in B2B, you're seeing it in B2C, you're going to see it in B2B in 2024. I don't know if this is the year. I would say within the next few years, you know, it'll really take off. I would say within 2 to 3, but you'll see a climb every single year. And I see it doing really well on LinkedIn, X, and YouTube. Those are the three places I see B2B influencers doing really well. The content will also be uploaded to Twitter and TikTok. I mean, not Twitter, TikTok and Instagram and Facebook. But the platforms I see it doing really well is YouTube, LinkedIn, and X.
Nice. All right. Well, we're coming down to the final minute, and I want to be super respectful of your time because you tell me what are you most excited about for the future, for the next year of what you guys are up to?
Yeah, what I'm excited
that come
about
out.
is, what I'm excited about is, we're expanding really fast internationally. I think we're in 19 countries now, or 16. I think it was maybe 19. We're continuing the expansion. We're having fun. We're growing the organization. We'll be at 1,000 employees really soon. We're getting close, and again, we're just having a blast doing it.
I love it. Well, awesome. Well, Neil, thank you so much for coming on the show today. You've been a wealth of information, not only on the show today, but I would encourage anybody who does their homework on Neil and digs into his thought leadership. You are going to get nothing but value. I just really enjoyed spending, the last couple of days learning more about you and getting into the research. And what I love about you is you give it all away for free. And for those that are willing to put in the work and the hustle, they can get out there and they can try and execute with all. He gives you all the keys to the castle. And if you don't want to do the work, then you should hire his agency instead. So,
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
yeah, you got it, man. So, for those of you that are following along at home, if you enjoyed this podcast with Neil today, don't forget to subscribe or like us wherever you're listening or viewing this podcast. If you would be so kind as to review us and give us a positive review, that allows us to find a larger audience on the internet every single day. And most importantly, if you enjoyed my conversation with Neil today, if you were to share this episode with a colleague or a friend that you think would get value from it, we would really appreciate it. So, from all of you at home, thank you so much. Neil, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.